Winona Forever is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, head on over to cageclub.me. Hi, I'm Lindsay Gibb.
And I'm Rekha Tulsaram.
And this is Winona Forever. Hey everyone. So last two weeks ago, we were like, hey, the next movie is about robots, I think. Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Not about robots. So Winona's not a robot.
Oops.
And neither is Simone or Sim One or Swan Zero and Knee.
Or Simone, as Chris says.
Simone. Whatever this movie is called. I didn't really test. Do you have to type S, like number one?
To
find it?
Yeah.
So annoying.
So that was awful. I hated doing that.
It was terrible to find.
I don't like to write with numbers and letters as English.
And then in the end credits, they were doing that to people's names.
Everybody's name had ones
all
and
had
zeros.
Ones. Yeah, it was a whole. We've had that before. Was that in Lost Souls that it started with like weird numbers?
Like coding or something. It's part of the early 2000s.
And maybe Elias Koteas, because Elias Koteas comes back in this movie. So there you go, Winona and Elias together again. So the plot of this movie is that Al Pacino is a director who seems like he's had a bit of a career, but maybe isn't super successful.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making a movie with Winona as his lead, and then she backs out. And so he's desperate, and Elias Koteas comes to him with a computer program that he can use to create an actress. And then all hell breaks loose.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very heavy-handed movie that's talking about technology and what terrible things it'll do to us. And it's really weird because I guess it's the timing of the movie that the actress who's playing the like computer animated woman is a real like actress.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't they just computer animate an actual?
I don't think they had the technology.
They just didn't have the technology for it.
I thought I read in the trivia that they could, but the Actors Guild didn't like that. So they didn't.
So for real, it was a real problem at the time. If they'd really tried to do.
Rachel Roberts was Simone, or whatever the hell her name is.
Sim One.
She's from Vancouver.
Oh, I don't know why. There was something that felt like, I don't know. It wasn't just because Elias Koteas was in it again, but. I don't know. Something felt Canadian about her. Aside from the name, this movie just like continued to upset me.
It was really hard to watch another kind of like, is this going to end soon? You're like, because we all kind of knew how it was going to end anyway. Like,
it was very predictable.
Yes.
Every turn was annoying. All the characters were really like stereotypical, whatever they were doing. Like Catherine Keener was the stereotypical like executive.
Yeah.
The way that everybody fawned over Simone. So the whole thing is that Simone is this computer animated like actress that everybody suddenly falls in love with after she's in one of his movies. And then he says he's going to tell the world that she's really just a computer animation after the second movie, but doesn't. And then everybody wants to meet her, and he just makes up all these elaborate lies to like, and finally says she's agoraphobic and doesn't want to see anyone. She starts doing interviews from like remote locations, and then she does like a concert where she's like a hologram. It gets really out of control.
At one point, she's in the third world. They don't say where, but she's in the third. They just refer to it as
the third world. Yeah, there was some things. It's so weird. But it was such a like product of its time, I feel. Like, I think there was a lot of movies around the 90s, early 2000s that were like, this is what could happen if we let technology do too many things, like Lawnmower Man or something like that.
Yeah, like, the fear of technology, like, taking over everything.
That's one of the first thoughts I had when I watched this was, I'm getting a lawnmower man vibe from this. Maybe it was the CGI and,
totally.
The techno dystopia of it.
And, like, right away, Al Pacino seems like he's losing his mind because he's, like, making this computer-generated woman, and he's, like, he's doing the talking and she's talking to him, but, like, really he's talking to himself, and it's like, and he's like making her say things directly to him.
Yeah. He's having full conversations.
With like, Victor, what are you doing? Yeah. It's just like, whoa.
But I thought that was, that could have been really dark and perverse.
Yeah.
And, but the film in its way of wanting to be liked, like, kind of didn't mind that kind of twistedness.
Right.
They made it more of a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't funny.
It wasn't funny, but they tried to play it as if it was, but I don't know. Like, it was too light for you know what I mean? For what it was. Like, you can't just have a conversation with a robot and then just, or like a computer, and then just dismiss it. I keep saying robot.
Say weird things to yourself that are really like self-centered and like, I don't know. Yeah, it was dark, but not. It didn't want to be dark.
Yeah, he would be really manic and talking to himself and talking to Simone, who is really himself. And I think there's like two failed sensibilities that were at work. There's the techno dystopia thing that you mentioned, but also when Hollywood satirizes itself.
Yeah.
So like The Player, The Muse, like there are a lot of films. And sometimes, like, I think this is an example of Hollywood doing a really bad job of satirizing itself, that the characters were such stock, you know, versions of a producer and a director and an actor.
Yes.
And also I thought the depiction of celebrity and fandom was really inaccurate. Like, even by 2002, you know, with like people didn't just adore celebrities, right? There was also like a kind of menace, but it seemed like there was just this benevolent, like, love for Simone, and there was never like the kind of the worst thing is a kind of sexual menace that was implied in the sort of guys who spy and follow around, the paparazzi guys. But apart from that, there was no real kind of sleaziness of fandom that sort of exists like by 2002 in like culture.
Yeah,
am I the only one who had that thought?
It was like a mass love, like that weird scene where everyone's just celebrating her from like the Taj Mahal to like
unconditional adoration,
you know, on a what's it called, a pyramid in Egypt. There was like her reflection. They just like the worship and love for they have for this.
Yeah, it was very unconditional, and even the like executives had like no critiques for her. They were very much like, we just want to meet her, like we're tripping over ourselves to meet her. When they had that party after one of the films, maybe the second film that she was in, I don't remember, somebody in the distance looks a little bit like she could be her, and everybody starts running in this party to like meet her, and I'm just like, okay, like, this is a Hollywood party. These are all like famous people at this party. Does that happen at Hollywood parties? Like, do they all run to meet one person? Like, I get it. It's supposed to be that she's like, nobody's met her, so everybody's like dying to be the first person to meet her. But everybody falls into a pool. It's just like ridiculous.
You just think some people wouldn't give a fuck, you know?
Yeah. Just like, yeah, not every single person would be like, she's the best. Because definitely, like, there's actors who, you know, people say, like, George Clooney's the best or whatever. But, like, there's still people who don't like him. So there would still be that, like...
Yeah, like, I don't know. You can't all be compelled by this blonde woman. Like, you really can't.
It's so weird. But the worst part was that she wasn't a good actor. She was very, like, one note.
Robotic. Like, or, like, digital, computerized. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
Oh, but there was the one interview toward the end where she tries to sabotage her own celebrity, and she starts like aping what sounded like today, like Trump talking points.
That's exactly what I wrote down. I was like, oh, this is so like dated, because we know now that saying these things wouldn't hurt your career.
No, it'll just help you.
Simone could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue.
In fact,
not,
you know, she was transitioning to politics after, you know.
Right. It was so like creepy how, because the types of things she said was like, immigration, don't we have enough people or something? And then what was the other thing she said?
Cigarettes may be bad for you, but you know,
they
maybe
make you thin or something.
It's better than eating, and you can hold something in your hand.
She said, there was another one that was very Trump. Like, oh, yeah, kindergartners should have a firing range.
Oh, yeah, the firing range. Yeah.
It was weird how it was, like, just checking off the boxes.
It really Trump was. It's like, oh, my God.
It's too real.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, I think the fact that she wasn't a good actress was really the thing that bugged me, because Winona was barely in this movie, and she, when she finally comes back, mm-hmm. she does a good, like, audition for Victor, who is Al Pacino. And then I was like, okay, you just have to hire her to be your lead actress. And that's exactly what he does, is go, okay, you can have the lead. And she's like, but isn't Simone the lead? And he's like, oh, right, right. And I'm just like, he's trying. He knows that she's not as good as a real person or whatever. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
But yeah, and it was sad because Winona's in this movie like three scenes or something.
Yeah, three scenes.
Sigh. So at the beginning, she's like this like stereotype of a rampaging like actress who wants, I don't know, Rhett, Cherry, Mike, and Ike's taken out of her.
Yeah, like, her trailer is not. Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be the biggest on the lot, but it wasn't high enough.
Yeah, someone else's was taller. Yes. Even though hers was the widest or whatever.
And that was no good.
Yeah.
That was a deal breaker.
Yeah, exactly. That's what made her leave. Or she also said she didn't get the movie. So it was almost also like, he's this misunderstood director who's making arty films that like Hollywood's not getting. Mm-hmm. So he uses this computer program. Which, I mean, this is also the other thing. Like, Al Pacino is not a sympathetic character in this because... Hank, who is Elias Koteas, who's like this, I don't know, computer genius who has like only one eye because he has a tumor in his eye because he's used the computer too much.
Yep,
and he comes to him like, I've got this miraculous thing that you can use. And he's just like rejecting him like, oh, I've had a bad day. I don't want to talk to you. And he's like, you can't talk to me later. I will be dead. Like, I'm going to die.
Yeah,
he's tomorrow or whatever. Right. Like, how he knows that, how he's an active walking person knowing that he's going to be dead, like, next week. But then he is dead next week, and then he leaves the CD-ROM or whatever.
The computer program to create his actress. Well, the actress has a base. Basically, he just has to, like, add little features to it.
I also find it not believable that Victor would know how to use that computer program so quickly. Like, he's just like moving things.
Yeah,
like,
that's what
screen.
I kept wondering. Like, how
it's
does
like a
he?
Savant.
Yeah, like this guy. He didn't seem like he would pick up technology that fast. So, like, computer programs. Like, he didn't know what the hell. Like,
well, you remember men that age in the early zeros and their their adeptness with the internet.
Yeah, like it doesn't
exactly.
Like high speed was a relatively new phenomenon in 2002,
and it was like the best. He had the right computer for it right away, like with all these screens.
Yeah,
so
suddenly
that he could do that. It didn't. Because he was just like sliding like the mouth of Audrey Hepburn and like whatever.
Yeah, like drag
things.
And drop some, you know, Bacall in there.
Like, world, what year is this?
2002.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And how in 2002 was there all this drag and drop technology for? I don't know. I didn't believe it. It's not believable. There's lots of other things that aren't believable in this movie. Like when he tries to not use her anymore. Like when he's like, I'm done. I don't, I have to kill this. I can't do it anymore.
So he makes an entire film.
Right. First, he makes an entire film called I Am Pig.
I Am Pig.
Where knows what else happens in it, except at the end, she's in a wedding dress, like, eating out of a trough with a bunch of pigs.
Yeah.
And then everybody thinks it's brilliant.
Yeah. Like, the audience is reacting, like, disgusted at the end. Ends directed by Simone. And then, you know, everyone's like, standing ovation.
It.
Yeah.
But then he uses an actual floppy disk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
To kill her with something called
the plague.
The plague.
Or plague.
Which is like, okay, so he's got a computer that, maybe there were computers like this at the time, I don't remember, but that has like a CD-ROM drive and an actual like floppy disk drive, not a hard disk, but a floppy disk.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that tracks.
People don't know what floppy disks are anymore. It's fine.
Yeah. But then the whatever, the, like, case, or what do you call it? Like, the thing that he put all the discs in.
The CPU? Or?
No. When he went to drag
trunk.
It out.
Oh, yeah, the steam trunk.
Trunk.
But it's like an old-timey steam trunk. Right. It's not just...
Where the handle can break. It's not like
so
a simple...
So he tosses the CD in there, and what else is in there? Like a bunch of hard discs, I think?
Yeah,
and
just
like,
discs.
Well, maybe some floppies. I don't know. A bunch of random things that can go in computers are in there. And, like, as soon as he's dragging that to his yacht to go dump it, you know right away. Like, oh, they're going to think he actually murdered this woman and took her body in this trunk. Like, why did you have to do that?
Like, why did you have to dispose of it?
There was no need.
No, like, you could have thrown it in the garbage. Like, there's not going to...
You could have stomped it. You could have broken the CD. Like, there's no...
No.
There was no need for it.
So
that just got ridiculous.
And, of course, his daughter... played by Evan Rachel Wood is like a computer hacker genius girl who can figure computers out,
which they only set up by her like being on a computer once and him going like, get off of that, you're on that all the time,
like go play outside. And of course she's just
remember
like
an hour and a half later
and then you're like, and then she's when she's on top of it and she's figuring out like the computer somehow, even though all the stuff's erased, she can get it. Because
I know
she's a youth.
It's completely unbelievable.
She's a youth with a computer.
She's a youth, so she's able to like hit,
it was like,
hit like three buttons
in Jurassic
and make the
Park,
computer come back.
The girl, the little girl in Jurassic Park, they had to rely on her computer skills to like open the park security back up or whatever. She's a hacker.
She's like, young. She's the only young person in the movie, so she's got to be the one who can fix everything. Right, because everybody... thinks he murdered her, and he's now trying to prove that she's actually just like a computer program.
Yeah,
but
and like
he's
because he's in
it,
prison,
so
he needs something to like get him out of there. And his daughter figured, well, there's something here at this computer.
Yeah.
Which she happens upon.
Which she sat there for a minute, like hitting the same button and getting the like no file thing.
She clicked that a lot.
And then finally, I forget what she did, but she did something and then hit like three buttons and then Simone like rematerialized on the screen.
Oh yeah, so I checked my stubs. I didn't watch this in theater. I don't think came to Ottawa.
Right.
Or something, or I don't know. I don't think I was just...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I remember reading the review in the Globe.
Really? So maybe it did. I don't know. I didn't see it in theater. And I rented it, and I had no memory of it rewatching it. Nothing. Hmm. I probably just fast-forwarded like through it, because it was just didn't hold my interest back then, and clearly now, but just...
I mean, it at least... In comparison to some of the other movies that we've watched recently, hi, Beans. Beans is up on the table with us here. You want to talk about Simone? What are your thoughts?
Nothing.
Do you hear some purring? No.
She's mic shut.
Yeah, she'll meow from a distance, but not right into the microphone.
Even
in comparison to some of the other movies we've watched, it at least had like a plot that was kind of linear and that like
it didn't
made sense and like I could follow it. And I as predictable as it wasn't like ridiculous like Lost Souls or something where you're just like, why is any of this happening? It was very much like, yes, why is any of this happening? But like I expect it to happen because it is. It is what it is. But like when I say it's of its time, like I remember in high school writing a play that was like kind of about like what would happen if like virtual reality like kind of took over our stuff, and then like a short story in like university that was also about like technology and like our distraction by it or whatever.
Yeah, we read a lot of that stuff in like the 90s. Do you ever read The Veldt? Like it was like this computerized home and the kids never left it or whatever, and they felt like they're... But then there was something at the end, like the digital thing came real and like killed them or something.
Right. Always. Yeah. Always that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like Ray Bradbury stories or something.
Yeah.
Like.
And like that was true in this too. Like as much as you thought, okay, Evan Rachel Wood figured out that like how to prove that it's really a computer, but that's not what they do. They go, oh, she's still alive.
Yeah.
And then now she's like with Victor and they had a baby, like, so he just is stuck in life pretending to be a part of her. I don't know,
they created a digital baby for some reason. Like there was no real need to do that.
It's a nightmare scenario for him, but it's so
she's
it's
like,
almost like
surprise, I'm not really dead. That was also like, who does that? Like and she's holding up the paper where they like
announce
her
newspaper.
Death, and she's like, guess what?
I actually wrote down the words, come on, it's in the paper, about like people's in a refusal to believe.
That lawyer was the worst lawyer. Yeah, Al Pacino's lawyer was like, just take the plea deal. It's the best thing you're going to get. And he's like, but I didn't kill her. She's not a real person. And then he's like, come on, it's in the paper. Oh, yeah. It's like, what lawyer? You immediately need a new lawyer. That's what your lawyer says. Oh, my goodness. There was one funny team kind of in this. I wish I'd looked up the name. So it was Jason Schwartzman
and Pruitt Taylor Vince.
Is that the guy's name? The bald
guy? Or it's
guy?
Like Vince Taylor Pruitt. I don't know the order of his name.
Right. That sounds...
But yes, he was in the movie Heavy, directed by James Mangold, which he did before Girl Interrupted. Which is very
interesting. Yeah, I feel like he's kind of a comedian who plays creepy characters and things sometimes.
Yeah, he kind of
plays I enjoy him. Pruitt Taylor Vince, you got it. Oh, was he in? I think he's in Face Off. Maybe.
Nick Cage.
Maybe not. No.
Well, did you know the director? What is his name? Mike Nichols or Vic something Nichols?
Not Mike Nichols. Not a different Mike. Nichols.
Some other Nichols. Alex Nichols. He directed. He went on to direct that Nicolas Cage movie with the war and the guns.
Oh, Lord of War.
Lord of War.
I like that.
Oh, he's in Drive Angry. There's a Nicolas Cage connection. I feel like I've seen his face in something a lot.
So Andrew Niccol is the director. So he directed and wrote this, and he's from New Zealand, but he also did, Lord of War. And then The Truman Show he did. Oh, yeah. Gattaca. Like, this is his thing.
Okay, so I'm looking up what this Pruitt Taylor Vince guy was in, and he was in Wild at Heart and Drive Angry, two Nicolas Cage movies. Anyways. but him and who did I say? Also a Nicolas Cage connection, Jason Schwartzman, his cousin. I enjoyed them kind of. Like, as much as they were the creepy ones, too, they were also funny. And, like, at least Jason Schwartzman's part was, like, funny. He was, like, passing out and, like, crying on the table when they thought she was dead and stuff. And so, But that was the only part that I was like, okay, I can see where this could be a comedy, but they just didn't like.
They didn't expand those two. Yeah, like when they went into the hotel room after, and the guy was just like, can I be by alone? And he's like in the bed and sniffing everything, and
which was also as creepy as it was funny. Right?
Yeah,
it was both.
Yeah, that was a creepy funny scene.
And you like the toothbrush that went in the toilet. He
of
then
course,
like kisses
that was
and
be
stuff.
A thing. Yeah, like, that was a setup. Like, oh, right. He's going for that toothbrush.
Yeah,
what's he gonna do with it?
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
I had two thoughts about Winona.
Mm. We need to talk about Winona. That's what this podcast is about.
Did it strike anyone else that she played an actor that misbehaved and then was subsequently cast out of Hollywood?
True.
I mean, true in a way. Like, was she really cast out of Hollywood, or was she just
she went in his
movie because he wasn't that successful?
But then she went and reformed herself. Remember,
to.
She said she came. She went and did like
classes.
Oh, that's true. She went into rehab and all this stuff.
There were a couple of weird things in it. Did you notice? Like, there was one scene where at the beginning where that Hank is talking to Victor. And there's like an eye that goes by in the background.
Oh, yes. There was some great things right at the beginning where they're moving all the things, like all remnants of Winona off of the set. And there's like a dumpster that goes by with all these like standees of her.
But the giant eye just kind of passes by.
And it's just Winona's eye. Yeah.
It was really strange.
I don't remember the eye. I remember when he's like really defeated and it's clear like he just blew this important film and he's walking around the corner of the lot and in the background it says like stage 4, which I thought like maybe that was like stage 4, like of a disease or something, or like, you know, his last, I don't know. I thought there were little mise-en-scene things they did with
there
the lot.
There was stuff, I'm sure, yeah. Did you hear like the radio part where she's in the car? And it was the Oscar thing?
Yes.
Like, I wrote it down.
Oh, you did? Okay,
I wrote
good.
Down what it was.
Because I have like half of it. I was like, oh my God, that's so weird. What a funny
The
read.
Escalating violence, tragic loss of human life, and threat of all-out war was overshadowed today by the announcement of the Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
Like, switch. So heavy-handed and brazen of what the social comedy, like the
yes.
like the social commentary, I guess they just thought was stupid and they weren't interested in it, or mm-hmm. I don't know, like why did
like they wanted to do more with it, but they like pulled back.
They kept jumping in and out of it. Like at that point, I wrote this gets more ridiculous as it goes along, and it was like like there was moments like that where you're like, I could see this being actually funny,
but
they didn't know if
they should have made it funny or serious. I feel
exactly.
It was just confused.
When Simone was a mannequin and talking to his ex-wife, when he was operating Simone as driving
the car.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was...
It reminded me of a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, it reminded me of Seinfeld, too. Oh, we're all scared because Beans is going to destroy everything. Nope. Oh, there we go.
Tried to get on the interface, but it wasn't steady enough for her. I might have to pick her up.
Rekha should just take pictures of what's happening so that post pictures of the near destruction of the podcast by Beans. There was a few things that reminded me of Seinfeld in this. Like when, I'm not going to remember the name of the character he plays on Seinfeld, but he plays George's boss on Seinfeld.
Yes, then Kruger. Mr. Kruger.
Yes. He's the like cop at the end who's like saying, well, you're in jail. We know that you killed her. And he's like, I didn't. And he can't not be Kruger. He's always this guy that like kind of doesn't care. Yeah. And is just like, well, this is the way it's going now. Like, but that part was also like the over the top ridiculous part, because it's like, first of all, the interrogation room was this huge room that had like all these lines hanging up with like all her magazine covers. Like, and it's like, why would that be in the interrogation room?
why was there a television in the top corner?
Yeah, there was so many set things. Like also the room where Simone kind of lived was just this big empty set.
Yeah.
Which on one hand makes sense because they thought they were filming the film there, so they were renting this for him. But like, why was it right in the middle of the room? Like,
that was so frustrating.
Why would you walk all the way to the middle of the room to use a computer?
Doesn't make any sense.
It's always like that. Yeah, in these things.
Well, you have to get a long extension cord.
Plugged it in?
I want to watch it again and see if there's any cords or if it's just like sitting in the middle of the room with no power to it.
I assumed it was for the shot.
Maybe these studio spaces have plugs like in the middle of areas.
Maybe.
Because they have to set up different. Probably. I don't know. I don't know how studios work.
Also, those flat screens were ahead of their
time. I never made it to Hollywood. I don't know.
I felt frustrated for Catherine Keener as well, because I felt like she was playing this character who was in some ways strong, but then when it came to Simone, she was just like, I'm not as good as Simone. Like to Al Pacino's character, Vincent, she was like, why would you want me and not Simone and all this stuff? And it's like, are you kidding me? You're like a strong woman who's like, I don't know. It was very upsetting to watch Catherine Keener. Like,
yeah, because she's so cool otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't playing a great person
but people were so like obsessed with Simone.
Yeah.
Like the Simone stand-in Faith or whatever.
Yes.
And they have the sex and she's like, call me Simone, like have, you know.
I mean, I at least hand it to Vincent that he was like, Victor. Yeah, I called him Vincent. Victor, yeah. She's like, he's like, this is weird. Let's maybe not do this.
Yeah, at least he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So I thought he would, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that he was going to get back together with Catherine Keener and it would just, like, he would have still been lying about Simone and that she would have just gotten back together with him because, like, Simone wants him, so now I do. And I thought, oh, that's going to be the worst. But that wasn't what happened, so that's good at least. I don't know. The way she acted reminded me, sorry, this is another Nicolas Cage reference, but of Cheryl Lee in Wild at Heart. Have you guys seen Wild at Heart?
I have,
yes,
but I don't
remember it
so
very well.
So Cheryl Lee, that's Laura Palmer, right? That like at the end, she's the good witch or whatever. And she like comes down and she's like, Sailor, don't look away from love, sailor, or whatever she says to him. But like, that's exactly the way that I feel Simone acted through the whole thing. And it's like, it works in like a dream sequence in a movie, in like a David Lynch movie. It doesn't work as like this actress who's supposed to have like wooed all of Hollywood.
Yeah. And she, like, there's no substance to her.
Yeah. So many things. So many things.
Oh, Simone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I also felt like this movie was obviously a creepy dude's fantasy. Like, the whole thing where they're saying, like, you're controlling her, you're, like, holding her hostage in your house and all this stuff. Did you feel that way, though, about, like, Victor and, like, the whole, like, creepiness factor of the fact that he's, like, controlling this like, woman? Even if she's not a real person.
I just watched the Surviving R. Kelly documentary.
Oh, boy.
So this was very, like, it was just, like, him, like, saying, oh, yeah, she's fine, don't worry. These people are, she's happy. It's all, like, controlling everything. She's, well, because she's not He is at her, but anyway,
yeah.
But this is—it's very similar, and so that red flag for me. I was like, this is very creepy.
Yeah, it's a story about a desperate guy who does an extreme thing to try to turn his life around, but he relishes every like awful thing you can do with that power in a weird way, because it's like he makes Simone say to the actors, do whatever, you know, is in Victor's vision. Victor knows best. Oh, so, like, there was a weird, what's the word, narcissism that he was exercising through Simone?
Yeah, that's what was, like, the R. Kelly thing, because R. Kelly is just, like, you know, that girl that was on, like, spoke on TMZ in this R. Kelly documentary, she would just, like, everything is fine. R. Kelly's taking care of me. Mm. And, like, you know, it's just brainwashed, weird, creepy stuff, and you can tell that someone's, like, telling her what to say. So,
yeah. And then creepy. When he says she's too beautiful, I'll fix that, and gives her a mole. Yeah. Like, what the hell was that? Like, yeah, did that make her flawed? Yeah. Like, I don't.
So strange.
Didn't even make sense.
Like, all the commentary on like women and like, I don't know, like, all the Catherine Keener not feeling perfect next to her. And like, it was very upsetting stuff. That is probably true things. Mm-hmm. About the way women are viewed.
The film told on itself a little bit.
It really did.
The baby's name is Chip also, which is...
Oh, when they have the baby
at the corner. I thought that was oh my God, of course they named it Chip.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't... Yeah, I noticed his name was Chip, but I just thought, what a stupid name. I didn't really think about the fact. Right?
Computer Chip.
Computer Chip.
Oh, boy. Because, you know...
Hank's photo on his grave was another, like, actual comedy moment. Because when he went to see Hank's grave, Hank had, like, a gravestone that had a picture of him on it. And like, him with his, like, eye patch or whatever. Like, it's just like, ugh, so silly.
I thought the name Taransky was, like, a ridiculous arty director name.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Tarkovsky, but it's more phony sounding. Her ability to manufacture fraud now exceeds our ability to detect it.
Where is that?
That's
like
that's a quote from Victor at some point in the film. No,
he's like But even is it fraud? Like, I guess maybe what he did was fraud. If they were paying the actress and he was just taking the money.
Hmm. Yeah, like it wasn't.
But like in the budget, she was saying, oh, in this budget, you don't have any contingency for like wardrobe and like different things. And he's like, we don't need it. And so it's like, on one hand, he was putting a real budget together for a digital character. But I guess on the other hand, I suppose she was getting a salary that.
It's hard to feel sympathy for a producer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Another part of the Catherine Keener sadness was when she was talking to him, I think, about like Simone and stuff, and she said she clawed and slept her way to where she is.
Oh God, yeah. I did remember. No. I did notice that. No. Goes with the territory or something like that.
Yeah. I was like, no, I don't like it. Boo.
Or that weird scene where Victor tries to like buy his daughter a car, like Simone's old car from the movie.
Right.
And the daughter's like, what the fuck? I don't want this.
I just want my dad.
I just want
Victor Taransky.
And it was also very awful movies within movies in this movie. Like every time you watch these non-existent movies. They always had like too much of a blue tint. They just looked preposterously unrealistic. As
yeah,
except for maybe the pig one by Simone. Yeah. That actually did look like it could pig. Be like a, I don't know, like an art film, like yeah. Salo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh Lord.
So but at the same time, as much as this is a ridiculous movie and I'm not surprised that I never watched it, though, honestly, actually starting to watch it, I was like, I feel like I've seen this, but I also felt like maybe I just saw something else that like it because like I think there were so many other movies at the time that were selling the same message. I didn't hate watching it. I just, I kind of hate watched it, you know?
Yeah.
I just made 5 pages of notes.
Yeah.
While watching it.
My attention definitely waned.
Yeah, I got a message that's from Chris fair. Midway through. He's like, I don't know if I can make it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I think the thing that also made it hard was it took maybe about half an hour, 45 minutes into it. I was like, are we getting Winona back? Or is she literally not in this movie anymore?
Yeah.
So I was at least glad to get her back 2 more times, mm-hmm. even if they were just... one scene each, but
and then the last scene was her at the prison talking about how weird he was for wanting to not have Simone as the lead,
mm-hmm.
even though she would have got the lead.
Yeah, and she was clearly a better actress, but again she was in that same boat as Catherine Keener, is feeling like I'm lesser to Simone. How could you ever give me her
and
role?
All she wanted was to be co-starring with Simone, that was the dream. It's like, are you kidding
me? I want to play her sister.
It was fun to watch Winona act in a scene read, acting.
Audition scene.
Yes.
Yes.
It reminded me of Mulholland Drive.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Those are two good audition scenes.
Yeah. It was really good. It was the other thing that made you go, she's a better actress.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I don't know. Again, I think this falls into the, Winona was not considered a beauty of Hollywood, but
mm-hmm.
Winona could have played a better digital actress who was actually a good actress mm-hmm. that people looked to and was like, oh my gosh, this wonderful actress came out of nowhere. She just doesn't have the look that actress had, that was just a computer blonde.
Blue eyes, whatever.
So if we've learned anything, Winona's a good actress. Did it take us this long? No, we knew back in the 80s, I think. I hope we get to see more of it, because I feel like these movies that are coming up, she's not in them that much, right?
Yeah, I was looking at my ticket stubs, and I was turning pages. There was nothing. I think the next movie that I saw that she was in theaters was Black Swan. So there's going to be a big gap. 2002 to 2009, 2010, Black Swan came out. And when did the Star Trek movie come out? Before
2009.
Okay, so I saw Star Trek. That's not true.
Where's Simone?
So there's a 2-year gap between Simone and the next thing in her filmography.
The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. And I
and
did
it says
see...
she's uncredited, so is she barely in it as well?
Barely in it.
Oh, boy.
Do we have to do it?
I don't know. Maybe the uncredited ones
we'll do in one big shot. Yeah. Or we could do them in all in
Zoolander,
one episode. Yeah,
that and whatever else.
So the Darwin Awards is the next one. Then.
I don't think I've seen that.
What? We're hitting one where you even haven't seen.
I've never seen the Darwin Awards.
Well then, I mean, she's at least on the picture of this, so that to me,
I think
makes
this used to
be
on.
She's in it more.
Netflix second maybe, player. Or
I think so too.
It's like a direct-to-video kind of deal, or what?
I think so,
maybe.
Not a bad rating, although I guess lower than Simone, so that doesn't bode well.
Yeah, we're getting into the uncharted territories now.
And another comedy. Or
yeah, there's a lot of comedy people in it.
Adventure, comedy, romance. So that's
Juliette Lewis is in it. This what? Is okay. Julianne Margulies.
And Jodah Freelander.
Yeah, and she's back with Lucas Haas, who was in Boys.
Yep.
There we go. Well, exciting.
Tim Blake Nelson. That's a good cast.
Yeah, it is. It does look like a good cast. Maybe this is one of those movies that people just didn't know about, but isn't too bad.
I used to be really into the game. What is it? 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Uh huh.
And like anytime I hear about Winona acting with somebody I didn't expect, I always kind of like try to reconfigure how many degrees of Kevin Bacon I can get.
Right.
But well, it's pretty close.
What I started thinking after seeing Elias Koteas was also in this, and he was it Lost?
Lost Souls.
Mm-hmm. I almost said Lost Boys, and I'm like, that's not right. who has she been in movies with the most? Like, what?
Same actor? You're
the same person.
Well,
Keanu.
Is it Keanu?
I don't know. I'm just saying Keanu is one.
Keanu is one. Pacino, she was in the Looking for Richard documentary.
Which is why I was like, they
were already in something. Oh, we never talked about that.
Yeah. We'll talk about it when we talk about documentaries or appearances as herself or something.
And it's a strange thing, whatever Looking for Richard is. But they were together then. And she almost did Godfather 3, but she didn't with Pacino. That would have been another Pacino combo. But that she didn't.
Dodged that bullet.
And then she got to kiss him in this, which is weird. Yeah.
Who else does she like double act with?
Like, she's not part of a group of actors that, you know, some directors always use the same. Was she with Natalie Portman in anything other than Black Swan?
No. Not that I know of. Yeah, we'll have to investigate this and come back to that question later.
Claire Danes was in How to Make an American Quilt and Little Women.
That's true. That's right.
Very good.
Pretty good.
That's something.
Yeah. Well, and also she wasn't with Claire Danes in How to Make an American Quilt because she was a flashback character, and she wasn't with Elias Koteas in this because they just weren't in the same scene.
That's true.
So there you go.
And there it is.
Anyway, oof. So yeah, we're still motoring through these movies. But it was weird to like watch this and think of like short stories and plays that I wrote like in high school. I was like, wow, it's not good when a movie reminds you of something you wrote in high school. Alright, so I guess Darwin Awards is what we're coming back for. Come back in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Bye.
Winona Forever is part of the Cage Club Podcast Network. Episodes produced by Chris Landry. Music by No Refunds. Hosted by Lindsay Gibb and Rekha Tulsaram. Contact Rekha and Lindsay at winona@cageclub.me.